Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, January 20th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, introducing the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric with voice-activated sync and My Ford Touch, featuring gas-free power, zero CO2 emissions, and battery management technology that lets you go the distance. Learn more at FocusElectricPower.com. And by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now, absolutely free, at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Dr. Kiki.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And we have collected the best stories in technology for you today. Lots of late-breaking stories today. And the best journalists and hackers at large to tell you all about them.
That's right.
Joining us on the line, Don Reisinger, freelance technology journalist. And I've done a podcast with him before. In fact, Jason's even created a podcast for him.
That's once. Right. The digital home, right?
How's it going, Don?
How's it going, guys?
Good to have you on. Also joining us because we have a big story about Google changing their management, and we want to get his perspective particularly on that. Kevin Marks, hacker at large, and as I understand, a former Google employee, right?
That's right, yes. I worked there until July before last.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Well, thank you both for joining us, and let's start with that story. Google had their earnings report today. Everyone thought, oh, this is, you know, it's going to be a good earnings report, shouldn't be anything unusual. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the markets close, and Google announced, yeah, we've got great earnings. Looks like $6.4 billion and $8.75 a share. That's beating the street in both places. Oh, and we're changing CEOs.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Just a little side note. They when the earnings call happened at 1:30 Pacific time, Eric Schmidt, Larry Page, and Sergey Brin were all on the call and took questions off the top, which is a little unusual. Usually the earnings call is your CFO going mm-hmm. through all of the financials and then taking questions from the analysts at the very end. But this was a little different situation. Starting from April 4th, Larry Page will take over as the CEO in charge of day-to-day operations at Google. Sergey Brin will have the title of co-founder, and he's going to devote his energy to strategic products and working on new products. So more of development and being the product guy. And Eric Schmidt, who has been the CEO up until now, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, co-founders, if you didn't realize. Eric Schmidt, who's been the CEO, will now take the role of executive chairman and focus externally on deals, partnerships, customers, broader business relationships, and government outreach. Now, Kevin, these guys get along, and you could tell that in this question and answer session on the earnings call. There's no enmity here. So, what causes this kind of change? Do you think?
I think they get along very well, and I think they're going to carry on working together. I suspect this is Larry saying, "Okay, I'm ready to step up to CEO," and Eric being ready to give him space to do that. I also think there has been a bit of logjam from having three at the top who have to decide things. So I think some of this may come from Sergey as well, where he wants to spend less time in those triangular discussions and offer more time to do that and handing that back to Larry. And Larry has always been the one who's been most involved with the organization. He still reviews every hiring packet that goes through Google. Mm-hmm. So every employee goes over his desk.
And Eric Schmidt put on Twitter at the same time as this announcement, adult supervision has ended.
Yes.
which a little bit snotty, but Eric Schmidt says crazy stuff sometimes. But it also points out, hey, you know what? They don't really need me to hold their hands anymore. Is that what's going on?
I think that, you know, he's always been the one that talked to Wall Street and talked to the press, and they were warier about letting Larry and Sergey out in public about that. And I think they've got over that now. And I think Google's big enough and mature enough that that they're not worried about having a special face just for Wall Street.
Pour Me Coffee on Twitter, by the way, had one of the funniest takes on this. It says Larry Page has just ousted Eric Schmidt as mayor of Google on Foursquare. But Don, do you think it's like that? Do you think, as Leo Laporte and I were talking about when we covered this on Breaking News earlier today, Leo thinks that Eric Schmidt's on his way out. What do you think?
It could happen. I really think it could happen. When I heard this, I sort of – my first thought was, I'm seeing Larry Page on a bike with training wheels, and Eric Schmidt, like the good parent, is behind him, running him down a hill, and finally he's letting him go, and he's teaching him, hey, this is how you ride the bike. And, you know, this is him learning how to be a CEO, and now he's taking the reins, and I think it makes sense. I mean, you know, Larry kind of, like Kevin said, was always very involved, and it makes sense to put him there and let Eric do all the deals and do all the other things that he had been doing before.
Wall Street Journal reports that Page, Brin, and Schmidt all agreed when they brought Schmidt on board that they would work together until 2024. It's sort of an informal pact between the three.
Can I just say that there's no chance of the guy? I just don't see that happening. I mean, Eric Schmidt, I think you guys were talking about earlier, actually, that, you know, this guy, he's got tons of money. He can do what he wants to do. He's proven himself as a CEO. Does he really want to be Larry's sidekick for the next, 13 years? I don't see that happening. I think he'll probably go somewhere else, do something else, and, you know, make a name for himself outside of Google.
Kevin, what do you think? Is this an informal pact something you'd heard of before?
It's something they've mentioned before, and they've discussed it publicly as well as, you know, internally at Google. They said that they're going to stick together, and part of the, you know, the odd corporate structure of Google is designed so that other shareholders can't vote them out. They've got special 10 times most powerful voting shares. So Google is always designed to last a long time, and that structure's for there. So I'd be surprised if Eric did leave suddenly. I suspect he's going to spend more time on regulatory stuff. Those kinds of issues in Washington, and leave the product and day-to-day stuff to Larry and Sergey more. He may end up doing a political thing, but I think he's comfortable there. I don't think he feels like he has new worlds to conquer. You know, yeah. Google's a hugely successful company.
I'm just wondering where this is going to leave the direction where Google's direction is going. Eric Schmidt had a statement out this morning as well, talking about going in the mobile direction, and that Google was going to be focusing in that. Is that with Larry stepping up, is that going to continue to be the focus, or, you know, is this something that the three of them have agreed is the direction that Google's going to go, or now that Eric is going to step to the side, is there going to be something different going on?
I'd say that they're going to stick to that. What he said was all their key initiatives were mobile. Sergey on the earnings call briefly said that he was working on social search, and there was a long way to go with that, and it was 1% along or something. One of the, you know, but mobile is the key to that as well. One of the key things that Android gives Google is sort of very direct access to who you call, who you text, who you talk to. So a very, very direct social graph. And as more and more phones have Android, Google gets more and more of that data. So they've got that stuff there based on actual usage, not on, you know, who you decided to friend. So that's something that they'll be able to build on over time, I'm sure.
I wouldn't expect to see too much change in the direction of Google, because these guys have been all three sort of figuring out that roadmap. But one of the things that was speculated was that the idea of doing business in China, maybe a few other decisions that Eric Schmidt pushed for, Larry and maybe to a lesser extent Sergey, were not all that comfortable with. Do you think that pushed Larry to say, look, I want to take over more, I'm ready for this?
I think it's possible. I think that you know, when three people are in charge or three people are making decisions, it's difficult. And I think that with Eric at the top, or he was at the top, I guess, CEO, you know, maybe he had a different outlook. I think he's more executive-like than Larry and Sergey might have been, and maybe that contributed. It's possible. And just going back real quick to what Eric Schmidt might do and what Kevin was saying, actually, I think makes a lot of sense in terms of going into politics and getting more invested in that, because, you know, Eric, I think he's on the President's Science Technology Council, and he knows the president very well. You know, maybe that's where he's looking towards the future. He wants to get more involved in the legislation of technology and less in terms of running the company and all that. So it's a possibility.
Kevin, does that sound right? Does that sound like the role of an executive chairman?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, he was chairman before. You know, a lot of this is just like they're taking away some of their titles, right? If you look at the Google execs page, they were both co-founder and president, Larry and Sergey. And Eric was chairman and CEO. So they've just, I'm not sure if they're still going to be president or what they've done with that. But, you know, he already had that role, was chairman of the board, and doing that, he'll continue to do that. So there'll be some continuity there. But I suspect this will mean that he'll spend less time doing product reviews and those pieces. Because, you know, any big launch from Google has to go through basically a founder's review, a review by the three of them. At least it was when I was there 2 years ago. And I think part of what they're trying to do is streamline that now so that they aren't the gating factor and everything anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to stay agile when you're that large.
I'm just wondering overall how what effect this is going to have on public perception of Google, switching CEOs, how people are going to take this. Recently, there's been a fair amount of talk, I think, of people talking about the decline of Google. And so what is this going to do and what is it going to change?
They're that successful and that large, people can start talking about their decline.
Yes, exactly. Yes. The rise and the fall of the great Google, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, the parallels to look at immediately are Jerry Yang stepping in as co-founder of Yahoo, and becoming interim CEO while they looked for a replacement, eventually replaced by Carol Bartz.
And that happens very often.
That's not what's going on here, because that was an interim title. This is not. Larry Page is not an interim CEO. Nope. He's taking over. The other parallel I thought of, and I'd like to hear what you guys say about this before we move on to the next topic, is Ballmer and Gates. Bill Gates became chairman but stayed at the company, and Steve Ballmer took over as CEO. That seemed to work very well, even though it was so-called a diminished role for Gates. Mm-hmm. It allowed him to focus on product development a lot more, although Gates was the founder of the company. In this case, it's the opposite. The founder is coming in as CEO, and Eric Schmidt, who was brought in more in a Ballmer-type role,
Ballmer was the founder of Microsoft too, but Ballmer was there early on.
Sure. And, Schmidt was there very early on as well.
Yeah. And Schmidt was brought in as the CEO for them to go public with, right? It was sort of classic venture.
But you're
thing.
Saying Ballmer was in the
that famous photograph.
He was in the room with them when they were coding. Yeah, I see what you're saying. He was brought in quite a bit earlier.
Yeah, so it's not quite the same thing. I think with Google it was okay. You guys need a sort of big name CEO to take Google public. Back then in 2000 and 2000, Eric joined, I think 2004 they went public.
2001, I think is when Schmidt joined.
And that was that's the sort of the classic, venture capital thing of you guys are too young to be the CEO now, and that's that's something that that maybe has changed a bit. Certainly, Larry is now 10 years older. He's had 10 years of experience running and growing this huge company along with the others. And I'm sure he's comfortable stepping back into that role. I'm sure he'll do fine.
He's got
a really good long-term vision, Larry. He's very good at looking at the big picture and not getting too bogged down in the day to day. I think that'll continue to be true.
I hate to be the guy to say this, but is there an ego thing here? I mean, is this Larry looking at Eric and saying, look, this guy's running the company that I helped found, and I want some of the accolades. I want some of the attention that Eric's been getting all these years. I mean, is it an ego component? It's possible. I don't know. I mean, I think it's easy to say, they're all friends and they're doing this because of that. But, Larry has the money, he has the expertise, he has the respect, but does he want now the respect of being an executive that people can respect on the same level they might respect a guy like Steve Jobs?
No, Kevin. Yeah, not.
I don't. Steve Jobs
question.
Is very different.
Yeah,
Steve Jobs is very much the sort of charismatic figurehead, and really, none of these three are. They're not that sort of they don't have that presence and the ability to dominate that Jobs has. And you can see in the start of the company, Google is a lot more consensual. Part of it may be that there are a bunch of other executives at Google who are like, okay, there's never any space to move up here because you three are all at the top. And there may be some of that in it. Maybe thinking about how they can bring other people on because they've lost people to Facebook, for example, over the sense that there isn't space to move up at Google, perhaps.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And I think these guys do really get along, although that doesn't mean there couldn't be a little bit of ego in it as well. And it's quite likely that this may have been the plan all along, that at some point Schmidt would allow Larry to take back over once he has learned it. I get a little bit of that feeling, especially with that Twitter posting. But
yeah, and it has been said before, many corporations, people can run a company up to a certain size and they just don't have the skills to run and grow a large corporation. You bring somebody else in who has that experience, and maybe that's what Eric did, and now it's time for Larry to step
Larry's like, I've learned how to run the big corporation.
I can do this now.
I can drive. I can take over the wheel. I've had my nap.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done driving the Tonka truck. I'm now ready for the 18-wheeler.
Yeah. What's that, Kevin?
Well, they have the photograph of the car that they put on the announcement.
That's right.
And it's interesting.
That's the greatest picture ever.
Because they've got Larry in the driving seat, Sergey's in the back seat, and Eric's outside the car.
Yeah.
But also, it's the caption says, this is a self-driving car. So this is like a second metaphor, which is like Google's big enough to drive itself now.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the next announcement in 5 years. They're handing over the stewardship of Google to the algorithm. Yeah. PageRank will be running Google from now on. All right, let's move on. We've got another board shakeup. This one not involving any officers, any CEOs, but HP announced that they're going to conduct another independent probe into the departure of former CEO Mark Hurd. Mark Hurd is now president at Oracle. And as part of that, they want an independent investigator and board members who were not present during Hurd's ouster to be part of the investigation. Well, up until today, that would have only meant Leo Apotheker and board member Ray Lane. So as of today, they have ousted, the following folks have resigned totally on their own. Joel Hyatt, John Joyce, Robert Ryan, and Lucille Salhaney. And coming in, they've replaced them with four board members plus created a new board seat. So we get Shumit Banerjee, CEO of Booz & Company, Gary Reiner, former CIO at GE, Patricia Russo, former CEO of Alcatel-Lucent, Dominique Senecchier, CEO of AXA Private Equity, and former California governor candidate and eBay CEO, or eBay president and CEO, Meg Whitman. So a big shakeup, Don. This is going to change how HP is run, although it seems to be being done simply to accommodate this investigation.
Yeah, I think that's really what's going on here. I mean, HP, the whole Hurd thing is a black eye in HP, I think. I mean, it wasn't handled well from the beginning. Now it's not even being handled well. I think this is HP's attempt to say, look, let's try to clear some of the bad eggs out. Let's get some new people in here that'll be on our side, and then we'll take it from here. So, I mean, it makes sense. This is a company that wants to get over this and wants to turn the page. But, there's still a big bullseye on Mark Hurd, and I think this is a clear example of that.
Kevin, have you followed this story much?
Not really followed it closely, no.
No.
I'm more interested in the product side of HP and the stuff they're planning to announce soon than this.
That's mostly what we've been talking about is the new tablets, right? The webOS tablets. How much do you think a board change like this can affect product launches? Those things are pretty well baked far out. But I think in some ways you can see Leo Apotheker's stamp already on their strategy.
Obviously it potentially can, but more in the way that it may find that, if somebody's had a champion inside the company and that person leaves, then it can be different processes there. So it's going to be interesting to see what they come out with and how, can they keep webOS up with Android and iPhone? I think that's a huge challenge.
And the third bomb dropped today. Verizon is suing the Federal Communications Commission over the net neutrality plans that they unveiled in December. Verizon says it loves the open internet just so long as it's not legislated. The quote is, Verizon has long been committed to preserving an open internet and meeting the needs of our customers, but we are deeply concerned by the FCC's assertion of broad authority for sweeping new regulation. Kiki, this sounds like they're saying, we like the rules because they're almost identical to the ones we proposed, but you can't enforce them.
No. We can come up with these rules, but your enforcement? No, not allowed.
Yeah.
No.
So, yeah, I'll leave it open.
They'd like to have their cake and...
Yeah, and have eaten it also.
And have eaten it also, exactly.
Well, then I guess it begs the question of, when Verizon said, hey, these are our rules, everybody look at us, we're great, we're wonderful. Were they sort of just kind of doing that for the PR and not really saying, we're not going to follow through. Just this is what we stand for. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it at all, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, a fishy move. And I think a lot of this is a lot of the telco business is trying to get regulations in your favor, and being handed a monopoly is in effect what Verizon has had in various different fields. And the They've resisted the net neutrality rules for a long time. You know, the move from Title II regulation meant that all the ISP competitors went away, and they're just trying to lock that in now.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting. Maybe it's a perspective of they'd like to be able to say what they are going to do, but then just not have the regulation around it at all. So we will give you these, look at these awesome ideas that we've come up with. Aren't you happy with what we've come up with? But don't give us the actual government regulation. We'll do this. Maybe they're thinking to themselves, we're going to do this. We came up with these ideas. We don't need your regulation.
Well, then that joint announcement with Google should have been pushed as a self-regulation platform.
Right.
Rather than being presented to the FCC. I mean, it seems
very
like a
true.
Little bait and switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, if we look at what these companies have done, should we allow them to self-regulate? I mean, have they done enough for us to say, you know what, I think we can trust you guys, and I think you'll do exactly what you say. I mean, I don't see a history with Verizon or any other company in that space doing that. So I think government stepping in and saying, you know what, maybe we do need to regulate things a little bit. We need to make sure that you follow through on what you say is what we need, and not allowing these companies just continue to do what they want and say, but no, we're really going to do this, but not really go all the way with it.
Right. I mean, the better regulation is structural separation. I mean, that's what's worked in Europe, where you have a separate company that's responsible for the low levels of the net, and that can't be the same company that runs the high level services. And that's how the UK works. I was at BT until very recently, and BT is structured that way. There's a piece called Openreach that is the lowest level of the network, and then there's BT that runs the services on top of that. And Openreach has to sell connectivity to anyone else at the same price it sells it to BT and on the same terms. And that means that there's a very competitive ISP market in the UK. And this is common across Europe. And the US is different because you have these hugely vertically integrated things, and they hand out a local monopoly. So Verizon has like most of the East Coast, and Comcast has most of the West Coast. And therefore, you know, you don't have a choice of who you can get connectivity from. And that means that, and also that they then, you know, they'll only sell you bundled services. You can't switch between. And that is the sort of structural problem. And so the net neutrality regulations are trying to patch over that with detailed rules, whereas actually separating it structurally makes a lot more sense.
Bob Frankston, the co-creator of VisiCalc, was talking with Leo and I yesterday on triangulation. And his point is to say, we don't need net neutrality regulations, and we certainly shouldn't trust the ISPs. And talking to him, I became more convinced that this is a roads metaphor, and that the highways and byways of the internet, we have lots of capacity. It's just not being used to the proper amount because of all of these monopolies and the fact that the companies can't make money on selling bits. And that's why they want to have this vertical integration, and that's why they want to pile all these services on top and have these monopolies. But if you have those wires open for everyone to use, it's actually better for everyone.
Well, they do make money on selling bits. I mean, that's a fiction. But they want to tax other things as well. But the thing is, you know, I've often said that people are worried about commodification, but a commodity business means that you've got an established price that people are willing to pay, and that's actually a valuable business to be in. If you're not in a commodity business, you're in a fashion business, and that's much harder to deal with. So I think there's bits of the telco thing that belong as commodity businesses They're not, you know, they may not necessarily have regulated prices, but as long as they have consistent prices to anyone, that becomes important.
So you think they make enough money on bits? I mean, I think what Bob was saying is, sure, they can make a little bit, but not nearly what they can make selling services and content.
Right, but that, you know, so separate the two. There are different kinds of businesses, and they're run in very different ways.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Ford, makers of the 2012 all-new Ford Focus Electric with voice-activated sync and My Ford Touch. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric is an all-electric vehicle, no gasoline engine. It's powered by a lithium-ion battery with a high capacity, recharged by plugging it into a 120-volt or 240-volt outlet, has regenerative braking, offers a miles per charge that's competitive with the other electric vehicles on the market, and provides more than enough driving power between charges for most work commutes and getting around town. And it might even be cheaper than gasoline, depending on when you charge it and what the electric rates and gas rates are in your area, especially if you charge it at night. The all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric features sync with My Ford Touch, which responds to voice commands and touch controls for battery management, as well as, of course, entertainment, climate control, phone, and navigation. You can easily make calls, play music, and manage your battery on the go while you keep your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel. Sync understands more than 10,000 voice commands in total, so you can stay connected. Learn more by visiting focuselectricpower.com, and thanks to Ford for supporting Tech News Today. What started the day as our top story
is way down the list.
Got pushed down the line.
Nobody cares about it anymore.
Was the report? Yeah. Does anybody care?
Spotify, Google's got big elbows.
Yes. Spotify has finally signed a U.S. record company. Spotify, very popular in Europe. It's a music service that allows you unlimited streams of music, and they also sell memberships as well. And they finally signed Sony, according to reports, although Spotify's not talking about it. This is big, but is it big enough? They're not talking about it because they're not going to launch with just one record company.
Right. It'll be like a radio station that only plays the same song over and over and over again. Not having at least two, maybe three of the major labels signed means that they just won't have a good library of music to pull from. So they need more. We always want more. Universal music would be the best.
Yeah, I think three is a pretty good launching point. I think, like you said, with Universal, Sony, you know, and at the end of the day, I think even if you can tie EMI in there or try to get, I mean, at least three. I think three, you go to the market with a lot of content, plus you have all the independent labels that probably can strike pretty good deals with. And I think they're offering a pretty compelling service. But, you know, is one deal a big deal? I use deal twice. That's okay. But, you know, yeah, I think it's good enough.
Deal
but
squared.
Let's move on and let's deal squared. But let's see more. And I hope that's something that's going to happen in the next few months.
Yeah, and I think that's why Spotify is not talking. They're like, we want to have all four. And Greg Sandoval makes a good point on CNET, which Kiki just made as well. If they get Universal Music, that gives them over 50% of the music in the United States and probably would help them to sway the other two big companies to come on board. They probably have indie records already signed on as well, indie companies. I keep saying record companies, and I feel so out of date. digital
providers.
Music entertainment providers. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. But people are very excited to get Spotify in the United States.
Is iTunes holding it back?
Well, I don't know. No, I think the fear that iTunes put into the music industry might be holding them back. And in fact, according to IFPI, the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry, hey, now I don't feel so bad calling them record companies. The phonographic industry says that digital music revenue has grown 1,000% since 2004, but only 6% through 2010. So the sales growth is slowing dramatically. And they need more services like Spotify.
Yeah, and if they can get royalties or get some amount of licensing fees from the use of the music in services like Spotify, it's just going to add to the money that they bring in, so that people don't have to they don't have to rely on those direct digital downloads.
Yeah. Also,
I'm slightly suspicious of those FPI figures, though, because I'm not sure if they count everything or they just count the ones that are going actually through the labels.
They don't count the pirated ones.
Well, no, but they don't count the ones bought direct from the artist, is what I mean.
Right. In other words,
does that stuff get reported through?
There's a great secondary market. I do know it does include subscriptions, which I wasn't sure. I thought maybe it was only counting downloads at first, but it does count revenue from subscriptions, which helps. But that's a good point, Kevin. Mm-hmm. They may only be counting phonograph record sales if they're the phonograph industry. I kid, but that is a very good point.
But that's, you know, the thing that's happened to the music industry is that the revenues overall have gone up. But the amount of them that goes through the labels has gone down because a lot of artists are both selling direct and also using the net to tour without label support, because they can actually, you know, gather revenues from their performances that way, and also to sell merchandising and so on. So I actually reviewed this one in detail, but there was a lot of, if you actually look at the total size of the music market, you find that it has continued to grow, but the piece of it that is captured by the record labels who used to have the sort of monopoly of distribution isn't necessarily there.
Which is one of the key points that gets left out of the debate over piracy quite often, which is what needs to be done for intellectual property is to make sure that we have the ability to innovate, not prop up someone's business model. And if the overall music revenue is growing, then is that okay? Do we need, is there any negative effect? And that's probably a debate for another day, although it applies to our next story here as well. The RIAA is getting in a tussle with ICANN over proposals for generic top-level domains. These are gTLDs, so-called, that would allow anyone to create a TLD. So instead of saying, well, there's .com and .org and .info mm-hmm. and .biz, and you know, we'll add them as we go along, gTLDs could be applied for by anybody. So you could get .kiki.
And I could control all the .kiki websites in the world.
Now, there is they've already created a draft offering four grounds for objection. So, for instance, if I try to register .coke...
Coca-Cola might have a problem with
can
that.
Come in and say, well, wait a minute, that's a trademark of
or
ours.
Or Central America.
Are you, yes, are you a Colombian or are you trying to steal from us? And I will say neither. I, you know, I'm really into pig iron and that's what I wanted to do with that. But there are four grounds for objecting. One is confusion. It's confusingly similar to an existing one. So if I wanted to get .com, that's not allowed. That's too confusing. Legal rights infringes on the rights of the protesting group. And that's the one where the RIAA is saying, wait a minute, we need a better procedure for this. Morality and public order and community objection are the other two. But the RIAA is saying... the way we can prove a legal objection is bad. The objector must prove that there is a likelihood of detriment to the rights or legitimate interests of its associated community and the broader internet community. It goes on to say an allegation of detriment that consists only of the applicant being delegated the string instead of the objector will not be sufficient for finding material detriment. So if the RIAA, as they say, we're afraid that somebody might register .music, that's not us, and then use it for piracy, that's just saying somebody else might get it besides us. That's not grounds. RIAA is saying that should be grounds.
Well, argue that maybe it's somebody that it's, I mean, RIAA is just here in America, right? The Americas. So what are we talking about? What if a recording industry of Africa
then you
or
get the,
Denmark?
Then you get IFP involved.
Yeah.
And they'll, right. but they'll probably make the same objection, right?
Yeah.
And this opens up a whole can of worms. It's just, and it's not just the music industry, but it's all kinds. I mean, it's the movie industry. It's all, where do we go from here? I mean, how do you handle this? This is, I mean, I think in as much as the RIAA, let's just say I'm not a big fan. You know, as much as I'm not a big fan of those guys, I think they sort of make a point here. I think I can see both arguments at the same time. Yeah, I mean, what do we do if it's dot music and the Pirate Bay goes, hey, guys, you know, we're just going to take this. Where do we go from here? So I'd be really interested to see where this goes because I think both sides have valid arguments. But at the end of the day, something needs to give or else there are going to be all kinds of these debates going on the next, I guess, a few years.
Oh, yeah.
I tend to think that this is the RIAA trying to make, as they have been with all intellectual property rights, trying to make it very easy for them to stomp on people they don't like in their efforts to quixotically stamp out piracy in a world with infinitely copyable files where it's almost impossible to stamp it out. They look at this and say, we want a very easy way to object to any generic TLD. In other words, we want special rights. And I don't think that that's due.
That's
I think
not.
If someone did say, we're going to register .music and we're going to fill it with pirated sites and that's all, that... they could object under this clause. I don't think the clause needs to be changed.
No.
Well, I mean, it's like what they've been doing about seizing domains, where they went
very similar,
use
yeah.
extra legal means to seize domains, which they thought were pirating, and the government went along with it.
Yeah.
And then they realized, as usual, that their own people have been handing out the music to those people because they were promoting the songs. And these are not people you want to give extra legal powers to. You want to make them go through process.
Which is why everyone's upset about COICA, the Counterfeiting Online Act that's trying to make its way through Congress.
Yeah.
That would say all you got to do is go to a judge, basically like getting a warrant to shut down any site you don't like.
Yeah.
If you say they're infringing.
They're infringing. Oh, okay.
All right, finishing up with a couple of Apple stories here. First of all, Apple is making it more difficult for iPhone 4 owners to open up the iPhone 4 if they wanted to do DIY repairs. Now, that will void your warranty anyway, but just to make sure you don't void your warranty, they are replacing the Phillips head screws with something called pentalobe screws. And a pentalobe screwdriver is almost impossible to get a hold of. Not only are new iPhone 4s being shipped with pentalobe screws, but if you take your iPhone 4 into the Genius Bar at an Apple store, they will replace the Phillips head screws with pentalobe screws.
The bastards.
You know, I've actually had some battles with Apple over the years. Not actually with Apple, but with Apple products taking apart. I used to have I still have an iMac. I actually took it apart for the third time a few months ago. And you needed these. You had some parts that you can use a screwdriver. Other parts, you have to use the Torx screw, like a T8 and a T6. I can't remember.
Those aren't that unusual. A lot of electronics use those. Though. Yeah.
Right. But it's such a pain to take it apart. And it's, you know, that's why I typically, you know, I have my desktop and I'll build that myself, just, you know, that way I can pop in, pop out. But the iMac was really an issue for me because I wanted just to, you know, put a new hard drive in, and it was a nightmare to do that. Actually, I wrote about it a couple years ago on CNET. If you want to go back to the digital home, it's on there somewhere. But and I talked about how to take it apart, and it takes about a half an hour to do it. And in the process, you need to figure out where all these little screws went. It's just a nightmare. And this is more the same that, you know, I get it. I understand why Apple wants to do it in the end of the day. But as far as I'm concerned, I like when things are easier to take apart and they're easier to tinker with. I know what I'm doing. You know, we all know what we're doing. And I think a lot of people out there know what they're doing. And so why not let us do what we want to do?
I think there are a lot of people out there who are going to do what they want to do, regardless of the pentalobe screw. You get something that's a pointy star shape that has, you know, five points that fit right inside of that pentalobular structure.
Well, it's actually,
you'll be able to open it.
It's actually quite difficult to get something that'll work there, but iFixit has done it. So you're absolutely right.
You find something that is adequate. Right. Not exact, but adequate.
They've got
a
kit for iPhone 4 owners with a small driver that can remove the pentalobe screws. Now, the pentalobe driver isn't perfect. The tip is more star-shaped than flowery, but it can remove the screws. Problem is, when
just
it removes...
Just get them back in again.
Yeah, exactly. Once you've pulled them out, you've ruined the screws with this driver. So iFixit gives you
more
Phillips
screws.
Head screws nice. To replace the pentalobes that you damage when you pull it out. They thought of everything. And if you're a MacBook Air owner, because you also get these pentalobe screws on the MacBook Air, iFixit is offering a 5-point screwdriver that's also more star-shaped but can remove the pentalobe screws. And it doesn't damage those. Those you can put back in. So once again, just kind of like with piracy, the hackers will find a way around whatever you put in their way.
I didn't think I'd want to take this apart. I'm feeling the MacBook Air here and going, no, I really wouldn't want to try and fit this back to get stuff into something this thin.
You know, yeah. that's fair
that's
enough.
Part of
but
it.
There is somebody out there who does.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
I've already thought about it.
Apple's also released another version of iOS 4.3 beta. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but 9to5 Mac is reporting they found a folder called Media Stream deep within the new beta. This folder has some information about photo streams to which users can subscribe and share among friends. This combined with the previously known Find My Friends folder that were available in a previous iOS beta make it look like iTunes is building some sort of connected social network and that they, you know, probably not in 4.3 the way this stuff is buried, but maybe in iOS 5 will launch an advanced ping that involves mobile me and photo streams and being able to track your friends while they walk around with their iPhone's GPS
so
in their pocket.
So actually making ping usable?
Yeah, you could actually ping your actual friends and not just songs.
Yeah, that would be better. That would be better. I think it's good. I think they do need to delve more deeply into the social network stuff. They're being left behind. And if they really do want to create an environment that is conducive to them selling all of their content that they've got online, you know, be it apps, software, or music, movies, whatever it is, the social network is really a great direction to go for that.
It's probably what they're going to do with that North Carolina data center. Everybody's been wondering what they're going to do with.
Make it you social.
When I hear this, I don't know. Maybe I'm just sort of I'm kind of over the whole. Every company in the world needs to get into the social game and do this. I mean, I'm concerned that it might be something they just tack on that won't provide a whole lot of value to users.
I mean, like
if it's something. Yeah, exactly. Like Ping. I mean, yeah, it's sort of, hey guys, we're social now. Look, everybody. I mean, it's stupid. You know, I mean, I want to, if you're going to go social and you're going to try to implement these new ideas, do it the right way. And, you know, and as an aside to this, whatever happened to Lala? I mean, I'm sort of lost along that way too, where, yeah. I mean, will that mm-hmm. be, at some point along the way, become involved in iOS 5 or iOS 6 or whatever? I mean, there's a lot of question marks here, but, you know, adding social features for the sake of adding social features just doesn't work.
All right, let's take a quick break. And I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kevin, if you want to get one last point.
I mean, they've already done integration, but they've integrated existing services. So if you go to iPhoto, it connects to Facebook and Flickr and mm-hmm. you know, a chosen set of services to feed stuff in and out. So it may just be that they're working with that more. The other thing is that you've now got the ability to move stuff between devices. They've done with the videos. It would make sense for them to do that with the photographs. So it may just be, you can route your photographs to your mother's computer with something like Back to My Mac.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they would say, yes, we need to own the social network. It's more they need to connect to it.
I think that's a smart idea, which is we need to have some social elements to what we offer and maybe boost up Mobile Me, mm-hmm. but let's not launch a social network. Google has learned that lesson, it seems,
right.
as well.
Don't fight Facebook.
I would say don't fight them, but the point is try and standardize some of this stuff. Get on my hobby horse here, but you know, we've been trying really hard to standardize this stuff. We're starting to get there, and at that point the incumbents look like the outliers.
The other folks we have to thank is the folks who get rid of spam and the sponsor of the show, MailRoute at mailroute.info. If you would like to get rid of spam and viruses from your email, this is a great service. Whether you're one person or 50,000, they have a dead-on filter that removes spam and viruses. All you do is you edit your MX record. So you do have to have a tiny bit of expertise or have someone who does if you've got someone running a web host for you. And then you direct your email through their servers, they strip out all the bad stuff, send you the good stuff, and you have spam-free email. It really does work. I've tried it. Check it out at mailroute.info for free, or if you'd like to keep it, there's a TWIT discount. It's $30 per year for single users, or if you're a small business, $2 per user per month for 10 users. Once again, mailroute.info. We thank them for their support. Time now for News Fuse. Kongregate with a K is the app that lets you play free games on Android and is also GameStop's little partner in their toe in the water of a digital storefront. It has also been yanked from the Android marketplace. Google says that app stores are not allowed in the marketplace. Kongregate says their service, which allows online games to be cached for online play, should be no different than, say, the Kindle app, which lets you buy books and cache them for offline reading. Google says games are apps, books are not. You're out of here, Kongregate.
You are out. That's right. Google began testing number portability for Google Voice today. Although not every user will see the option, and Google says it will only be there for a limited time. The settings link points to a page that checks whether the number you want to use is portable. And if it is, you can pay $20 through Google Checkout to get the process going.
That was also a top story earlier in the day.
Just one word about that one, about time.
Done.
And I want to see that.
Amazon has agreed to buy online movie rental service Love Film. The American internet retailer, which already had a significant stake in the London company, said Love Film had a productive and innovative future, and the move is largely going to be seen as a defensive ploy against international expansion by the U.S. video streaming giant Netflix. Could Love Film go head-to-head with Netflix all across the globe? Could we get Love Film in the United States? Could there be a price war in the UK when the Netflix expands into Europe? Stay tuned and find out.
I'm scrolling down. I have a little tiny screen. Apple isn't as transparent as it could be when it comes to the effects its suppliers have on the environment and worker safety, according to a Chinese environmental group. The Institute of Public and Environmental Affairs, IPE, published a report, Chinese language PDF, on Thursday ranking Apple and 28 other companies when it comes to taking responsibility for supplier conduct, with Apple coming in dead last on the list.
Mm.
Ouch.
Cyber criminals have fewer ways to attack Microsoft Windows and sent less spam in 2010 than in 2009, according to Cisco. This is the first ever decline of spam from year to year. The networking giant Cisco released their State of Internet Security yesterday. Bad guys seem to be focusing more on attacking mobile devices, they say.
I wonder if we can get better security for those mobile devices.
Yeah.
Motorola is not backing down in the war against you using the device you bought the way you want. They will continue to use eFuse, their attempt to disable Motorola CPUs, if unauthorized software is detected. According to Motorola's own YouTube channel, if you want to do custom ROMs, then buy elsewhere. We'll continue with our strategy that is working. Thanks.
Many people are going to say... Ouch. Okay.
Okay, we will buy elsewhere.
All the comments on that thread, I believe, say that.
A team of security researchers have created a proof-of-concept Trojan for Android handsets that's capable of listening for your credit card and PIN numbers as you speak them, or even getting them while you type them, and relaying them back to the application's creator. SoundMinder sits in the background and waits for a call to be placed. When triggered, the app silently records the information, whether you're punching it in or speaking it, and then turns the relevant numbers from a sound recording into a number.
Scary.
T-Mobile. Well, you'd have to install it, right? You'd have to have said
you
yes.
have to be you tricked to into be installing the application.
Proof of
like
concept.
Most malware, exactly. Yeah. If you're very careful about that, then you won't. But if you know, if you install pretty much anything that comes along, be careful.
Yeah, and there are a lot of apps out there that you know you have to just accept what they want you to download.
Yeah,
and there's right. no
we're
no
seeing a lot of this. We're seeing a lot of this proof of concept stuff with the Android lately. I think you're going to see a lot more of it this year. So, something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. T-Mobile USA CEO Philip Hum confirmed today that 4G HSPA Plus versions of the T-Mobile Sidekick and the Samsung Galaxy S phones will be coming soon, according to a slide presented at a press breakfast today. Quote, we will launch as new the Samsung Galaxy S 4G and coming soon will also be a Sidekick 4G. Everybody knows the Sidekick, and we're going to relaunch the Sidekick and bring it as a 4G device, Android-based, into the market.
That's apparently exactly what he said, according to PC Mag. So there we go.
Thanks.
All right, finishing up with Twitter is getting sued by a company called VS Technologies, alleging that it infringes on a patent of theirs entitled Method and System for Creating an Interactive Virtual Community of Famous People.
That's right. Twitter is for the famous people.
So I guess if VS Technologies were to win this patent suit, Twitter would just have to kick off all the famous people.
Yeah, you get rid of the famous people, and then there's no more infringement.
Awesome.
Right? And then Twitter, the founders of Twitter, and everyone else have to go find jobs.
Right. So basically they're saying all your famous people belong to us.
I think that's
what
they're
saying. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Make your time.
Nice, Jason.
On to the calendar. A Facebook app for feature phones has launched, according to MSNBC. So if you are not on a smartphone and you listen to this show and you rail against us only talking about smartphones, hey, look at that. You got a Facebook app now. Samsung Vibrant is getting Froyo, says Samsung. It's going to come on January 21st. So stop with your conspiracy theories, everyone. The big four carrier CEOs are scheduled to get on stage at the CTIA 2011 keynote. This is the first time that all four CEOs, T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint, will share a stage. CTIA begins on March 22nd, so that might be a candidate for some special coverage. HTC is going to launch their Flyer tablet in March. They're thinking it'll be a way to beat the playbook, the BlackBerry playbook. We haven't seen much of the Flyer, but DigiTimes reporting that that will happen in March. BitTorrent inventor, I always want to call him Bram Stoker. Bram Cohen, although he is rather pale, is demoing a new P2P live streaming protocol that he's hoping to launch later this year. In other words, a way to stream live video across the internet using P2P rather than just downloads. He says you can do it now, and lots of people have, but he's trying to make it work right, make it work perfectly, and get rid of as much latency as he can. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And Amazon sent emails, I got one today, to people who have pre-ordered the Star Wars Blu-ray discs saying we now have an arrival date. They should be shipped and arriving at your house September 27th.
You may actually get it.
I may actually do that. All right, on to the voicemails. 260-TNT-SHOW is the number to call. We got this call from Orlando, which he thinks can solve this whole thing about H.264.
Hey, TNT crew, this is Matt in Orlando. I've heard all the pundits discussing what Chrome dropping H.264 or whatever, that whole situation. If Google is all about free and open, they should buy the H.264 codec from MPEG LA and make it open source. Put your money where your mouth is, Google. Open source is, the whole world can use it free forever and ever and ever until the next codec comes out. Love the show.
Okay, when I first heard this, my first reaction was, well, MPEG LA, obviously he doesn't realize that MPEG LA is made up of many different patent holders all pooling their patents to create a single licensing agreement. And so trying to buy those patents from everyone would be very difficult and very expensive. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Google is got a lot of money.
They're Google. They could do that.
If anybody could do that. Exactly. It's so crazy. They could do that,
just buy it, could Google. It,
could it work? Is there any shred of a chance that Google could buy H.264?
I'd be really surprised if MPEG LA would sell, because the whole reason of existing is to do this. Whereas, you know, buying VP6 and open sourcing that made a lot more sense.
Yeah, it was a lot better buy.
And also, you know, when they bought Onto, they got a bunch of codec engineers as well, which was the other part of the acquisition. They've got a good team of people who are writing codecs there now. Whereas if you just buy up the patents from MPEG LA, then you just get 264 patents, great. But all you're doing then is saving like Microsoft and Adobe and Apple, you know, $6.5 million a year.
Don, did you have a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just, you know, my thought was, I mean, obviously it would cost a ton of money. And like you said, Google has the money. But in the end of the day, if it's material to the financial statements, then Google's going to have to go to the next earnings call and explain to shareholders why they did it. And I think that's a tough sell. So, I mean, you know, I hate to ground it in financial woes, but, you know, you know, who knows how much it will cost anyway? I mean, it might not be material, but if it is, then you have to run into that, and that's where I think this whole thing just kind of goes south. But it would be a cool idea. It's a cool idea, but you know, it probably won't happen.
So the way around both these objections is for Google just to buy all the companies that have the patents,
exactly,
and then they would own MPEG LA. Which means
they're just going to buy Microsoft and Panasonic and Sony.
Yeah. Sony. You know, we laugh now, but someday.
Oh, that would be interesting.
All right. Kevin Marks, thank you so much for giving us your unique perspective on this. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Let us know where folks can find you online.
At tunnelvision.tv, and I'm Kevin Marks on pretty much everything. Just Google me.
Yes, watch Tunnelvision. Great show. You do that with Heather Gold, right?
With Heather Gold and Deb Schultz. It's on tonight at 5 p.m. at tunnelvision.tv.
And Don Reisinger, a pleasure again to be podcasting with you. Great to have you on the show today. Let folks know where they can find you as well.
Hey, just follow me on Twitter. It's Don Reisinger. It's Don Reisinger. And you find everything you want to know about me right on there.
That's it for this episode of Tech News Today.
It was a lot of fun.
You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT or give us an email, tnt@twit.tv. Send us a voicemail as well through our Google Voice number, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.